Welcome to Psyched, a podcast about psychiatry that covers everything from the foundational to the cutting edge, from the popular to the weird. Thanks for tuning in.
Now, have you ever gone under the quill yourself?
Yes, I have several times. It's I think it's a procedure that is, it's an interesting experience. Certainly, I've sat through several treatments in different systems. Some of the coil types are different, and I think it's a good thing to do. It's an interesting experience, and certainly, we all have our subjective sort of experience about what it felt like and what it did to our sort of thinking or mood or whatnot. So.
Yeah, no, I'm a big believer in that, and especially I've done that myself with my own experience. That it is really interesting, sort of the subjective effects and how it feels. And then, what was your experience of what does it feel like during the stimulation? I mean, what is the coil itself when it goes off? What is it?
Yeah,
what
so,
did you feel?
You know, some of the descriptors that we use and that I would use is it's a tapping sensation. For me, underneath the coil, there's a lot of kind of prickly kind of pins and needles sort of sensation. And I think at first it's a bit, it's a bit like, ooh, that there is some sensitivity there. It's a sensation that seems to, that at least my scalp I was able to, accommodate to pretty quickly. And I, was able to get up to a fairly high tolerance even in the first couple of treatments that I did. There are times when we were on the sort of the trigeminal nerve, and there's sort of this ophthalmic blurring, so you can get some eye movement, sometimes some tearing. And I experienced that as well during my couple sessions that I've sampled. So.
Is sampling just something that all people that do TMS do to themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I think experiencing that, right, sitting through actually complete treatment, I think is important. We actually have our doctors do it, unless there's a medical contraindication. I think it's important for the providers and the technicians. So we tend to have them do that.
Does it make you happier?
For me, my sort of subjective experience is I'm a big time trail runner. I run it basically every day, about 4 to 5 miles. And I get this sort of level of optimism after I run and clarity of thinking, that I have a lot of ideas that I have during my runs. And so the 4 or 5 times that I've had sat through a treatment, sort of randomly, they're not like in a row, I have a similar sensation actually to like, I just went out for a nice, 4 to 5 mile run and, sort of have this level of optimism about the day and clarity of thinking. So that's been my experience. Not everybody has those sorts of immediate sort of experiences with TMS. So it can really vary.
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on the day and the location. I mean, there's so many variables, and I think that the subjective effects of TMS are something that I think you need a lot more work. Because, the standard story is that, oh, no, you don't feel anything. It's just sort of the neuroplastic effects over months. But I don't know. For some of my research subjects and even myself and lab mates that have done it, there are some pretty significant subjective effects if you're at least either mindful enough or paying attention enough. Uh-huh. It's pretty interesting. And, yeah, one of the times this feeling of, for me, it was more less of a euphoria and more of a confidence, more of a mastery or control feeling.
Yeah, I would say it was that way for me as well. I tend to feel that way after I run. It's sometimes euphoric, but yeah, definitely a sense of here's what I'm going to do today, and I can do it, and clarity of thinking.
Don't you feel like if everybody felt like that, then they just wouldn't go for a run and would just put a magnet into their head?
Yeah.
What about recreational TMS?
Yeah, you know, I think that I actually thought about that. Like, I'm kind of glad I get that because it provides a lot of positive reinforcement for me to run. Like, there are times when I start out in the day not wanting to, and I just sort of tap into that feeling, like, I'm getting this done because I know I'm going to feel this way. So yeah, I'm kind of glad there's not like a little device in my closet that I can kind of access, because I certainly know that I would slide on the exercise.
Yeah, I think everybody would.
Yeah.
Any lab break-ins or clinic break-ins to TMS stimulation?
Yeah. Yeah, not that I know of or will admit to.
Well, this does raise the question of, I mean, I know that with antidepressants, some of the probably more fringe opinions, but, like, you know, everybody would be better if they were on an antidepressant. That antidepressants make anybody happier. Would you say something like that might be true of TMS? Like, would you in a different world with different laws? I mean, what do you think it's doing to you or to me to make us feel good, and is that a good idea?
Well, that's I actually have some reservations about that, because I think that from a data point of view, we know that there are certain patients with clusters of symptoms, and these, you know, so we can take patients with, you know, a certain score on the PHQ-9 or the MADRS or HAM-D, and we know they have elevated depressive symptoms, and you know, we do a history and we diagnose them with major depression. So, and we know a certain part of them will have basically, you know, network problems, so to speak, to be broadly, you know, spoken. So there's sort of a network disconnect. And if we utilize TMS, we know that network functioning improves. Essentially, and I'm trying to speak broadly, because without getting into the specifics of the different networks that have been named and claimed, so to speak, but I don't know that if we modulate sort of healthy networks that are in sort of a homeostatic balance and functioning the way they, quote, should be, that is necessarily a safe thing to do. And I think it's one thing to sit through one or two random treatments, and it's another thing to get stimulated, you know, 4 to 5 days a week. So I wouldn't put myself through that sort of protocol unless there was really clear evidence that I needed a particular network modulated. And I mean, there was a point when people talked about what would the world be like if everyone were on Prozac. I think we're past that. In fact, I've even read some editorials about, you know, is there an increased level of treatment resistance that we haven't seen before? And could the prolific use of antidepressants being contribute to that? I don't know. I don't know enough about antidepressants to be able to speculate on that. But
like antibiotic resistance somehow?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know that I know that sort of there is, you know, I read an editorial by Sackheim recently in Brain Stimulation, where there's pretty clear evidence that the chronic resistant depression that we're seeing today is definitely less responsive to medication than what they were seeing in, like, you know, the late 90s. For example.
Well, that brings up, I mean, I think this is also something that is a new idea for me, or at least of recent years in psychiatry. There's some sort of a story about psychiatry where, you know, we have these diseases and they're fixed, and the prevalence is fixed, and they're just sort of, you got the, you know, you drew the unlucky genetic hand, and things don't really change, and there's no real cultural influences, and it's just sort of this fixed lump of a field, and, you know, we come up with treatments and the diseases don't move. But you're sort of describing a psychiatry almost like the world of infectious disease, where sometimes, you know, new things come up and resistances develop, and it's just sort of this much more dynamic process, and you know, that brain stimulation is now a possible way to treat something that is now no longer responsive to antidepressants. I guess that's a different world than the sort of fixed universe that that people maybe described before.
Yeah, and I think we're all very. I think psychiatry, I hope, is moving sort of, I don't know what the word is, kind of transdiagnostically beyond the DSM-5. I mean, there's some usefulness to the DSM-5 or DSM-4, but I've started to think more in terms of network connectivity, and I think that's what TMS has taught me, is that the some of these older models, you know, the serotonin or monoamine hypothesis, you know, I'm a cognitive therapist, so there's sort of this cognitive model of the mind. And before that, there was, you know, the more psychodynamic sort of models. And those were useful at the time because they drove treatment at that time. But I think, you know, sort of TMS and other, you know, modalities that involve neuromodulation, DBS, VNS, TDCS, it's really about the network. Can you associate a network or a dysfunctional network with dysfunctional behavior, emotions, thinking, etc.? And then can we then develop sort of stimulation protocols, patterns, frequencies that can sort of bring those you know, networks more into balance? And I think it is dynamic. I don't know if there's a cure out there. The brain is incredibly dynamic. We're in a dynamic environment. And, you know, one environment for one person can produce sort of illness, where another person can have the same environmental stressor. You know, we take, you know, something like abuse, you know, or divorce or financial, you know, bankruptcy. So these are big environmental stressors that a lot of us will encounter throughout, you know, at some point during our lives. But they don't all produce the same problem with the brain. So I think it is very dynamic, if you will.
And so then if someone comes into your office, is there a depression space in the brain that you're just putting a magnet, or how does that work?
Yeah. So, I'm talking about this new sort of way to think of the brain, but in a way, I don't have biomarkers to tell me what's going on with each person who comes into our office. So we're sort of stuck with this, you know, diagnostics symptom based. You know, we measure very carefully the symptoms, and then we make assumptions of where on the cortex the magnet needs to be and what sort of modulatory pulse sequence needs to be prescribed. And then what we do is we have people go through treatment, but there's no biomarker feedback with that. We do more measurement with symptoms, and then we make assumptions about what's going on in the brain based on that.